My name is Ty French, and these are my rants.
Welcome to Ty Rants.
Hi, happy Friday, Tyrants. Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome back to Tyrants. My name is Ty French, and these are my rants. Whoa, we made it through another week. We made it to Friday. Thank you. Thank you, Jesus. This week, man, I'm telling you. I'm so exhausted. Why am I so exhausted? I don't know. I have no reason. I'm a single mom who works two jobs, who loves the kids and never stops. I don't know why I'm so tired. I don't know. All I could say is, you know, being me, it's a tough gig. It's a tough gig in these streets. But also what I will say is I had the most delicious chicken Caesar wrap from California Chicken Cafe. Is that what it's called? Chicken California Cafe? California Chicken Cafe? And delicioso. Delicioso. And I've just been so tired this week. I don't know what is happening to me. But yeah, I had to have a Red Bull. And sometimes Red Bull, energy drinks, coffee, I try to steer clear of it because the crash is sometimes bigger than the peak. Sometimes you crash before you even get to the destination. And unfortunately, that's where I've ended up today. I've crashed before I've reached the destination. I had a Red Bull, guess what? Immediately downhill. I needed it to take me uphill, and it took me downhill. And now here we're at. But anyways, hope everyone had a great week. I hope everyone is having an amazing weekend. I didn't do anything this week. I don't really have much of an update for you guys. I helped Tessa at a photo shoot on Tuesday for something really exciting coming up for the Tessa app. That's about it. I've been getting, you know, just like Coachella outfits and stuff together, but I ordered one outfit, you know, the one pants are in the shop, seeing if they can fit this juicy ass, and then I ordered another outfit last night that could be fabulous, it could be amazing, it could be stunning, it also could be so scary and so terrifying and so absolutely atrocious that I might need to go to jail. And don't worry, I learned from my mistakes from the pants that don't fit my juicy ass. I learned that even if something's on amazing sale, only buy it if it has free returns. So the outfit that's coming, it was a little expensive, but it was on a really good sale and it has returns. So if it doesn't work out, it's going right back into the mall or the mail. It's going right back into the mail and I can return it. But I, you know, it's a riskier outfit that I wouldn't typically wear. It's like a dress. Why am I acting like I'm going to the Met Gala and it's a secret? I got this like lime green dress situation that's like oversized and these like Bottega Veneta. Now hold up. Put the gun down. I didn't spend full price on Bottega Veneta. Absolutely not. You guys know I'm broke. They were on a really good sale. They were like 70% off from Essence and they have like the same yellow as the dress. And I feel like it could be kind of like cool and like, you know, modern, futuristic, contemporary, just like very sleek, similar coloring. I don't know. Or I could look like, you know, I'm playing dress up in my sister's closet. I don't know. That's to be determined. And I'll keep you guys posted with what I decide. But Coachella's around the corner. I am having some brands send me some stuff for our camping site. Our camping site is going to be so freaking funny. I cannot wait to share it with you guys. And this year, I have decided that I'm going to be vlogging Coachella. Well, vlogging as much as I can. Because, you know, sometimes in the later hours of the night, I don't think you guys want to see me like that. You don't want to see Tequila out in full force. So I'll be vlogging what I can, especially, you know, doing like a tour of our campsite, everything that you need. And guess where that's going to reside? That's going to live over on the Patreon. The Patreon. I've decided I am going to be doing a Patreon, and Friday episodes will be living on Patreon. I will keep you guys updated on exactly when that switchover happens. But I've been thinking a lot about it this month. And apparently so has that motorcycle outside. I've been thinking a lot about it this month. And I finally like had this epiphany with my career and like who I am as a creator and what I'm providing for an audience. And I've always thought that, you know, I hate when people ask their audience like for money or for subscriptions or whatever, but I don't know. I've kind of reached this impasse in my career where I feel like I'm self-employed and I'm a creator. I've been a creator forever, whether that's be photography or, you know, Instagram ads or, you know, now the podcast. I'm creating something for an audience. And in years past, I just have to hope that that turns into brand deals and advertisements and, you know, podcast ads and Instagram ads or whatever. And that's where my reliance of my income is. And as I was thinking that, I feel like that's where a lot of my stress in my life comes from. And that my content doesn't change or shift based off of if I have ads or not. I'm delivering the content regardless. So it's frustrating as a creator to be creating stuff, but then, you know, leaving it up to the gods of advertisements on whether or not you are rewarded for the entertainment and the creativity that you're creating for a platform or for people. And me creating a Patreon is really me kind of taking my own power back and, you know, putting some worth to myself and what I create and the time that I put into my art for you guys. And I don't want to be 40 years old and, you know, have worked on this podcast forever and be doing all this stuff and put all this time into this career and still be reliant on advertisers and be reliant on the fluctuation of these different platforms. You know, I was so heavily reliant on Instagram, and then when TikTok kind of took off and all the advertisements were kind of going over there, I felt a really sharp decline in my advertisements. And now with the podcast, I feel like I've put so much work into it and podcasting has become so much more popular, which is so amazing, but there's so many more out there. And so, you know, companies like Dear Media and Podcast One and all of these agencies that you want to get signed to, they're constantly raising the bar of what the minimum needs to be in order for you to be considered signable or to start to be, you know, making money with advertisers and stuff. And that is so frustrating that I feel like I'm on a hamster wheel and I'm constantly, you know, working towards goals and I'm trying to, you know, turn this into a career, and I'm really just relying on other people, and I'm sick of that. And so creating this Patreon, I feel like, is really going to help me to A, connect with you guys more, and to really just take my power back and get excited about having a reward for the work that I'm already putting into it. Does that make sense? And I don't want you guys to think that it's just like me like being greedy and I want money, or if I'm not making money, I'm not doing this. But it really is. It's like, this is like a full-time job. And I, not to say that like I'm never going to have ads in my posts. Obviously, I'm not on the Patreon, but I just don't want the success of this podcast to be reliant on whether or not an advertiser thinks that I'm worthy enough to place an ad in. I want this podcast to be successful because the people that are listening to it and the people that actually listen and take the time and love it and respond in the DMs or whatever, if you guys think it's successful, then it will be successful. That's what the Patreon is to me. And it's just going to allow me so many more opportunities to, you know, expand the podcast and make it better. And You know, do live events over there and, you know, happy hours and do, you know, just, I have so many ideas for it. So more information for that to come. I didn't really mean to just go into that whole Patreon spiel right now, but I kind of just had an epiphany the other day that it's like, you know what? I'm so sick of the fact that I've been in this industry for so long and I'm constantly just relying on if an advertiser, you know, wants to work with me or not. And I hate that. I don't want the fate of my career and the fate of my show or the worth of my show to be determined by someone else. I want the worth of my show to be determined by the people who actually listen to it. If you think my show is worth something and if you want to support it or, you know, get more content and subscribe to a Patreon, that's amazing. And that is where I'm going to seek that validation. I feel like I've been seeking validation in the wrong places when it comes to this podcast. And that is where my insecurities come over the last few months and how you guys have sensed, you know, I've talked and been open about, you know, just feeling a little bit down and out about it. I think it's because I'm searching for validation, not in the numbers of how many listeners I have or, you know, my community or how many people direct message me. I'm searching for validation in whether or not advertisers deem me as a real podcast show or a worthy podcast show to advertise to. And that is so dumb. It should be opposite. I should be seeking validation from you guys, my tyrants, who are constantly listening and actually listen to the show and actually like the show. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's kind of where I'm coming from. And so I'm really excited. I have so many ideas and all that to say, I will be doing probably at least one vlog a month over on the Patreon as well. And the first one is going to be the Coachella vlog. And I'm so excited. I'm so excited to show you the campsite, Camp Rat. And this year we've decided to get our own portable shower for our little campsite. So we don't have to wait in line. If you guys remember last year's episode, we had to wait in line for like the trailers in the campsite. And this year we're taking matters into our own hands. And we basically got a bucket full of water and a spray hose. And we'll be hosing ourselves down, Billy and I, in our campsite. So it's going to be a lot more glamorous this year. And I'm very excited. Obviously, I'll be able to show you guys how it is camping and how the bed works and getting ready and all of that. So, you know, keep an eye out for that. Also, Billy's going to be coming to Los Angeles after Coachella, and we're going to be doing a Coachella recap. Maybe we'll do a separate episode just for the Patreon as well. I don't know how it's going to look. And obviously, if you guys have ideas or inspirations for the Patreon that you guys want to see on there, send me a message on Tyrants Pod, and I'll add it to the suggestion bin. And it's going to be something that, you know, similar to the podcast, it's going to grow and it's going to change. It's going to evolve. But I'm excited to do that with you guys and not have to worry about advertisers or outside parties or getting an agent or, you know, this, that. It's going to be, the Patreon is about me and you guys. And it's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited about it. But anyways, on that note, JC got mad at me the other day because I told her that I want to reshoot the the Tyrants podcast cover again. She got mad at me. She said I'm not allowed to change it until October because then it'll be a year since it was changed. But here's the thing. When inspiration strikes, you got to listen. You know, when that creativity is flowing, you got to flow. You got to let the wind pick you up and fly. But I don't know. I don't know if that'll actually change or not. But I just thought that was funny. JC got mad at me. She was like, you can start the Patreon, but you're not allowed to change the podcast cover. Anyways, what else is new? Not much is really new. I feel like this week has just been so, so slow, but so fast, so long, but so short, so hot, so cold, so exhausting, yet so exciting, so beautiful, yet so disgusting, so bright, but yet so dark. I'm just kidding. I will say it is the spring equinox today, which means that we have as much daylight as we do nighttime. And I would just like to say, I've prayed for times like this. You guys know that I've prayed for times like this. I've been bitching and complaining on the podcast for the last 6 months about how it gets dark so early. However, you know, you got to be careful what you ask for, because now it's getting dark so much later, and add daylight savings time on top of that. I'm so used to the sun setting And I have 7 hours of cozy time to myself to unwind, to watch shows. And you guys know I can't watch shows unless it's dark outside because I only have a projector. And so, you know, I'm so used to, you know, watching a few shows, watching a few episodes, watching some movies. Now the sun sets, I might as well be tucked in with a glass of tea on my nightstand and a pill of magnesium. Night, night. See you later. Sleep tight, sugar plum. I don't have time to do shit after the sun goes down. The sun goes down and it's 8 o'clock, and then I barely watch half an episode of Vanderpump Rules and Watch What Happens Live, and I'm Snoozetown USA. I'm exhausted. And it's kind of really throwing off my groove. And I'm not complaining, because once again, I prayed for times like this. But it is taking me a minute to adjust to. And watch, the second that I'm adjusted to it, the second I'm ready, you know, for the late night sunsets, beach hangs, then the winter equinox is going to happen and we're going to go right back to being dark, dark, dark. And then I'm going to be depressed. And it's just like, you know what that is? The circle of life. Wow, my voice is really stunning today, if I do say so myself. That was just a really beautiful rendition of the circle of life from The Lion King. Shout out Beyonce. Anyways, Mrs. Josefina Cuervo is running his marathon on Sunday in San Diego. We have been talking about it lots on the podcast for the past few months. And Miss Josefina is running with Stu's Crew, which is a huge group of our friends in support of our best friend, Claire. They are running for opioid epidemic awareness, and they are almost to their goal on their GoFundMe to really just help spread awareness for this really, really a cause that is just really close to all of our hearts. Obviously, our friend Claire has been affected by this past year, and we are just so excited to go down to San Diego and support her and cheer her on. And I know Jose has been training so much for this, and he's so excited. And it would really just mean a lot to me if you guys, you know, maybe forewent your coffee this morning, forego your, you know, little snack at lunch, and you just put $5 into the GoFundMe. I'll post the link on my Instagram story on Tyrants Pod, and it's also in the Tyrants Pod Instagram bio. So literally anything helps. We are almost to our goal of $14,000. Thank you so much to every single one of you who has already donated. But yeah, just literally anything helps. $2, $1, $5. We're almost to our goal. And even if you go on there and it says we're over our goal, give $1. Anything helps. And it's just a really special cause that we need to bring awareness to. So that's what I guess I'll be doing this weekend. I'm going down to San Diego. It'll be I'm sure a really fun weekend to get to see a ton of my friends that I haven't seen in a while, but also a really just special weekend, a special time. I ended up watching the Call Her Daddy RuPaul episode. And like I said in Wednesday's episode, I am the biggest fan of RuPaul there is. I love her so much. And she has just done so much for queer culture and gay people and drag queens. And I love her. I really do. But I was just a little disappointed with this episode, not even with the content of it. Obviously, you guys heard my thoughts on the whole like all men cheat stuff on Wednesday. I watched it because I wanted to make sure I wasn't taking it out of context. And shocker, I wasn't. And I still disagree with those thoughts. But I just felt like there really wasn't that much meat to the episode. It was one really short, I feel like, for a Call Her Daddy episode. We never get RuPaul in that type of an interview situation. And I feel like when we do, it's typically, you know, on a much bigger stage, like, you know, a morning talk show or something. And so to get RuPaul stripped down, you know, I mean, really stripped down, what the hell was RuPaul wearing? Normally, she's so buttoned up. I've even seen her walking around in the streets of WeHo, like, you know, in a suit and tie. And she was literally in a pair of sweats. I don't really understand that. But maybe, you know, she wanted to get more stripped down. She was sitting on a couch and, you know, get more intimate and one-on-one. And we didn't really get that. We did a little bit, heard about her mom and dad and their relationship and, you know, all of that happened and, you know, his sobriety. But I feel like I needed Alex Cooper to dive in even harder on her. I wanted to hear much more about his sobriety. I wanted to learn, because I feel like not a lot of people even knew that he was sober. Like, I didn't know that for a while. And I don't know. I just feel like there were a lot of things that I would have loved for her to dig into. And I know this was just like in the press tour of RuPaul's book that just got dropped or is releasing soon, or I don't know. So maybe I need to read the book. You guys know I don't love to read, but this is definitely a celebrity memoir that I will get my hands on. I'll probably listen to the audiobook. I think it is read by Ru herself. So yeah, maybe I need to read it and really get a better look into it. But I love RuPaul. I just feel like Alex Cooper and Call Her Daddy has done much, I guess maybe not. Like, she doesn't really, and I'm sure there are limits to what she's allowed to ask people. But even when Hailey Bieber came on, I don't really think she like fully dove into all of the drama of the, you know, the Jay Biebs and the Selena, and same with Camila Cabello with Sean and Megan Fox. We didn't even, you know, she didn't bring up Love is Blind. She didn't bring up like, are her and MGK still together or not? So I don't know. Alex Cooper really isn't hitting, you know, the hard hitting questions, but then don't go on a podcast. I don't know, but I guess, I don't know. That's my thoughts on that. Also, so I tried on Wednesday's episode to give a rant on disclaimers, and one of you DM'd me and was like, oh my gosh, I was so excited when you brought up disclaimers because I was so excited to hear what your thoughts were. And I really fumbled the ball. I fumbled the ball entirely. I couldn't quite get out my thoughts on what I was trying to say. And so I was thinking the last day about like, what was I trying to say? And why did I write that down? And why do I think that that is so annoying? Like, disclaimers. And it is so hard for me to put into words because it's so, I think I started to explain what I was saying about hating disclaimers. And as I was saying it, I almost wanted to take it all back because, which is a disclaimer in and of itself. And I think that's kind of the point that I'm trying to say because, oh my gosh, I'm getting choked off again. I didn't want to put such a blanket statement. Like, I hate disclaimers. It's not my job to give you a disclaimer on things, blah, 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 blah. But then I was catching myself being like, well, disclaimer, this doesn't apply to all situations. But that's my whole thought process that I was trying to get out, is it's not my job for me when I'm talking about a scenario to tell you as a listener, as a follower, as a friend, a peer, whatever, to give you the, if you're not, you know, deep into the conversation or you're not understanding the context in which something is explained, then maybe that's not, you're not supposed to be in that conversation, or ask for context. If someone says something that is taken out of context, there are so many things that, you know, could get people canceled or that could be taken the wrong way or whatever. And so I feel like that's what influencers and celebrities and everyone gets so caught up on about these disclaimers. And they're like, you know, or trigger warning or this or that, or disclaimer, this doesn't apply to you. And then they say their statement. It's like, okay, but we already knew that in the context of the conversation in which you were speaking. And I just hate that we have to, we not as influencers, we as just everyone in society have to be like tiptoeing around everything that we say and giving disclaimers about things that we don't have to give a disclaimer to everything. I just explained that terribly again, but I kind of think I think I got my point across on what I was trying to say, but I feel like I'm about to talk myself into circles again. So I'm going to let that go right there. In funnier news, Lucas Gage was on Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen and Katie Maloney, and Andy Cohen, you know, like briefly asked him why he and Chris Appleton, please, oh my gosh, am I okay? Why he and Chris Appleton got married after 2 months. And he was like, oh my gosh, I don't know. It was a manic episode. Like, I don't know why I did that. The fur coats, it was crazy. And it really just, I was kind of shocked that he said that. And he wasn't like, you know, we were young, we were in love, we were whatever. I mean, I guess he's young, not Luke, but, or Chris. I'm having a stroke. but, ow, fuck me. I was playing footsie with myself and I just hit my ankle. Anyways, I'm over it. I'm over what I was just saying. Long story short, I thought it was funny. Lucas Gage was like, yikes, I cannot believe I got married in the fur coat. And he couldn't really share anything about the divorce because he signed an NDA. But it really has me thinking that it had to do with Chris Appleton. But how iconic that even if you know you're not going to last with someone forever, just do it for the culture, or do it for the pop culture. You're getting married by Kim Kardashian, dressed in a fur coat in Vegas, getting off her private jet. It's filmed for one of the most iconic reality TV shows of our time. And then you go and Shania Twain sings to you. I'd get married too. If anyone wants to give me that level of an experience, I'll get married to you tomorrow. Sure, we can get divorced after 6 months. I don't care. Cheat on me, sure. But I'm doing it for the culture. I'm doing it for the plot. I'm doing it for the story. I'm doing it for the tyrants. I'm doing it for the blog, for the Patreon. Anyways, so before we get into the chunk of this next little rant that I want to go on that I'm freaking pissed about, I just have to say, I was through and through a Disney Channel kid till I die. I was not a Nickelodeon kid whatsoever. Disney Channel raised me. Disney Channel made me who I am. Disney Channel gave me my sense of comedy, my confidence. That's a Raven literally shaped who I am. Before the Great Depression in 2009, we were building a house in Alpine, Utah, and I was going to have this giant room in the basement. And because of Raven Baxter's room in the basement where she had that floating bed, I was going to have a floating bed. I convinced my dad to let me have a floating bed. And I will never, never forget that recession for taking that away from me. I'm glad it got taken away from me because I would have been the biggest spoiled bitch in the land. But I could have really had my That's a Raven fantasy. And That's a Raven, her outfit style, like she was always just so quirky, so different, always was confident, knew who she was. And literally, I'm not kidding, like really helped shape to who I am. With a sense of comedy, the way I break out into different voices, she was always like, yo, little nasty, like, I just feel like so much of my personality was shaped by That's Raven. I love it so much. And then, you know, oh my gosh, there's so many shows. Even Stevens, Kim Possible, Phineas and Ferb, The Proud Family, Wizards of Waverly Place, Good Luck Charlie, Sunny with a Chance, Hannah Montana. How could I forget? Jesus. I mean, I pretty much watched every single Disney Channel show there was. And I, you know, after what I think Disney has its own qualms, and there are its own things that Disney Channel stars talk about their experience growing up a Disney Channel star and being a kid star and being a celebrity. But if you look at the track record of most of the people who come out of Disney, they're all very successful still. And they might have trauma about like being overworked or this or, you know, whatever. But to the core, I feel like they are good people and they, you know, have moved past that. You know, Dylan and Cole Sprouse. You have, I mean, Shia LaBeouf, Ariana Grande. I mean, not Ariana Grande. We'll get to her. Selena Gomez, Raven Baxter, the Jonas Brothers. Miley Cyrus, Ashley Tisdale, Hilary Duff. Like, there are a lot of stars that, you know, came from, you know, prime Disney era and are killing it now, are still wildly successful. Some of them have, you know, gone to school. Freaking Good Luck Charlie, Bridget Medler's literally, like, works for NASA or something. And then we go to Nickelodeon. Obviously, we're talking about Quiet on Set. I'm pissed. I have so much rage. And like I said, I didn't watch any of these shows. Very, very vaguely. I watched iCarly probably the most out of all of the shows. I never have seen Victorious. Maybe a little bit of Zoe 101. I was a little young for that. The Amanda Show, I remember like very, very vaguely. I didn't even remember the plot of it because my older sister's name was Amanda and she would watch it, but I was a little too young for that. So I was mainly Disney kid. I didn't watch any of these other shows. I didn't even know that Ariana Grande was on a Nickelodeon show for a while. And I've never seen it. I've never seen any of the clips. And so imagine how shocked I was to watch Quiet on Set. Never have seen any of these clips. Never had seen any of these like underlying sexual innuendo scenes. And like, you would think that, okay, maybe they're taken out of context or this or that or, you know, different times. But no, there were too many to just be a coincidence. And there's a difference in looking back at something like White Chicks or the Scary Movie franchise and being like, you know, there were some jokes in White Chicks that so fucking funny, but could never get past a writing room today. Like, it was just so inappropriate. There were so many, you know, racist jokes. There were so many homophobic jokes. But, like, everyone in the culture was just there at that moment. And it was for adults. And there were people of all, like, there was Black people in the writing rooms. I mean, it was produced by Black people, the Wayne brothers. And, you know, white people, there's like everyone was on board of this, like, you know, crass humor, and they're adults. So that's fine. So it's one thing to look back on a movie like that and be like, wow, that was funny. But wow, times have changed. Like, we don't really joke like that anymore. And then it's another thing to look back on these Nickelodeon shows and seeing these clips and being like, oh, but these are 12-year-olds. These are 12-year-olds. So not only do we not joke like that anymore, but we shouldn't have been joking like that with kids in the first place. It has nothing to do with, you know, the times and the culture or whatever. Like, I'm sorry, I wasn't 12 years old in my room joking like with these sexual innuendos. And obviously you're a kid and so you don't understand the sexual innuendos. Like, those aren't jokes for kids. But That's what Dan is standing by. He's standing by that these were jokes for kids. I watched the first two episodes last night on Max, and I literally was getting so upset that I couldn't even finish it. And I had to finish the last two this morning. And I honestly was like having nightmares about it. I feel so sad that this is reality for so many people. And that the amount of people who turned a blind eye and the amount of people who allow this behavior to, I'm sure, still be happening is mind-boggling to me. It is mind-boggling to me. I cannot wrap my head around the fact that there are people out there who manipulate, exploit, abuse 12-year-olds, children. Like, I'm speechless. I'm literally speechless. I don't even know where to begin. There are so many levels and different things happening in Quiet on Set. My brain just feels like a ton of mush right now. And I feel like the main two separations that I feel like I guess we'll discuss is the two men, Brian Peck and Dan Schneider. Dan Schneider, I guess, okay, let me get over with Brian Peck, little nasty-ass little bitch, first, and then we'll go into Dan Schneider. Ben Peck, who abused Drake Bell from Drake and Josh. Rot in hell. Rot in hell. I watching that part of the show was probably the hardest for me. To watch Drake Bell's dad, who was so passionate about Drake and his career, and he loved his son so much, and he took him to all of his auditions, and he only ever wanted that for Drake because Drake wanted it. Drake was obsessed with Hollywood and watching movies in the entertainment industry, and he wanted to act, and he was really talented, and his dad saw that light in him, and he took him to all of these sets, and he never left Drake's side. He always had an eye on him. He never left him alone with people. And that is how it should be. And that's what the laws are. The laws are is that a parent or guardian should not ever be without the child. And to watch his dad explain that even with that mindset and even with those thoughts, like, that isn't even enough to protect children in the entertainment industry. Like, people can manipulate and get in between parents and children. And that's exactly what happened here. And, you know, people lied to Drake and made it seem like his dad didn't have his best interest. And so eventually his dad got kicked out and ousted. And obviously his worst nightmares came true. And Drake's dad was correct. Like, this guy, Brian, was planning on abusing Drake. And there's a conversation to be had about cycles of abuse. And I'm not here to comment or give an opinion on that, because that is not my story. That's not my place. I don't understand the psychology of that. And I'm not saying that, you know, just because someone has been abused doesn't mean that that gives them a pass to continue those cycles of abuse. But obviously, Drake Bell got in trouble a few years ago for allegedly, like, soliciting a minor or texting a minor. I was trying to look into the actual facts today, but he basically was texting a fan that was, like, young and grooming her, and then allegedly there were photos. That technically was never proven in the court. There was, like, not a lot of evidence. So I don't know. I obviously believe victims, but then I obviously believe that, you know, there needs to be evidence in order to have a case hold up. Drake didn't even want it to go through all that. And so he just pled guilty and he ended up getting, like, probation and whatever, all this, whatever. I'm not saying he gets a pass on that. All I'm saying is that when that news came out and that broke, like, obviously I feel like everyone just attacked him. And now having this context and hearing his story, it's like, you just give him a little grace. Once again, it's not my place to forgive him or to give him grace or anything. I just, like, feel like I have a little bit more understanding and just, like, sympathy for this kid who did not have a normal life growing up whatsoever. And even though his parents wanted the best for him and tried the best for him and whatever, like, there are scary people out there. And this person manipulated his way into his life and, you know, took advantage of him. And he's never been the same since. Then he turned to drugs and alcohol, and then it's just, like, literally a downward spiral. And Drake wasn't given a formula for a normal, successful life. And that is just heartbreaking. It's so sad. At the point where, I mean, he's done so many good things in his career with Drake and Josh and being on The Amanda Show and all of these things. And it was just so sad to see him give this interview and talk about how he was so unpresent in that time of his life that he remembers everything about the abuse and those instances. But he doesn't really remember anything about the rest of it, like being on the show and whatever. And of course, he has fine memories and whatever. But that the most successful time of his life was so overshadowed by this abuse by Brian. And it's hard because, like, you don't want to live in a world where you're so paranoid and you're so scared of people and things. You just have to be so conscious of your intuition. And I would say 9 times out of 10, people's intuitions are correct. And I think the hardest part of watching the episode highlighting Drake and Brian Peck is Drake's father. Like, I feel like even Drake was speaking with so much grace and so much almost distance from the situation. Like, he just was there to, like, almost get out the facts. And his dad was just so emotional because he loved his son so much. And Brian weaseled his way in there and destroyed their relationship together. And he knew that something was wrong. And it ended up happening. And when his dad had very valid concerns and started to notice the attention and the touching and all of the stuff, he brought it up to production and he was told, oh, you might be homophobic because Brian Peck is gay. So he's just like that. You know, he's just kind of quirky and he's just touchy. You cannot weaponize homophobia and being a homosexual to being a creep to younger people. And that is the same type of nasty rhetoric that people now are using towards drag queens in the media to make them feel like they're all pedophiles and they're all gross and they all need to stay away from children and they shouldn't have, you know, story times and children shouldn't be at drag shows and whatever. Like, that is so damaging to the gay community. And I mean, obviously, the dad was right. And the dad, it had nothing to do with being homophobic whatsoever. And that just really bugged me that it's like, how frustrating as a parent to voice your concerns and literally nothing happened. Literally nothing happened. And thank God Almighty for Drake Bell's girlfriend's mom, who finally was the one to catch on to the situation and realize that something was not right and forced him to go to her therapist and unfold this situation. Because it just is really hard when you're in a toxic environment and you are the breadwinner for now your siblings, your family, for everyone. And you're just a child. And so you don't want to say anything to make anyone else upset. But your parents also don't want to say anything to make anyone upset, even if they're seeing something go on that maybe isn't appropriate, because that's their livelihood. And it just becomes this very inappropriate, weird power dynamic that there needs to be 100 more laws put in place that protect people from this. Because I don't think, like, it's a shame that now, like, being a child star has such a negative connotation and just so much drama with it. And I don't think that children should work and there should be child labor laws or whatever, but I think that there are people that are just meant to be stars and are meant to entertain and are meant to be on stage and, you know, foster their talent and grow. And it's a shame that, you know, people that do have such a passion for this, you know, get either overworked, exploited, manipulated, abused. Like, let there be a safe space for kids in the arts. Like, there needs to be so many more laws put in place. And I feel like that was a really big takeaway with Amanda Bynes. And they really focused on her a lot in the first episode and how she didn't have the same situation as a lot of the other child stars. I mean, it is similar in a certain ways, but like, she did not have a good relationship with her parents and her parents were definitely exploiting her and were not having her best interest at heart whatsoever. And she kind of got scouted by Dan, and it was just so crazy to see. I'm kind of late to the Amanda Bynes of it all. Like, I was such a big fan growing up, but not like in the Amanda Show situation. I was, you know, watching She's the Man and all of those movies. But to see the clips in Quiet on Set of her being so young with just so much talent, so much natural gift of entertainment, and then obviously seeing where she ended up now, it's like she had the whole entire world at her fingertips and we failed her. We failed her so bad. The industry failed her. And it's just like mind-blowing to see that and understand how. And obviously there's like so much that goes into play, like, you know, mental illness and drug addiction, alcoholism, all of these things. But there just needs to be so many more things put in place to prevent that from happening. And I will say, there's so much I want to say. I don't even know how to get it all out and what my thoughts are. I'm like losing my train of thought. Dan Schneider. So all of this came out and then he released an interview and I watched the interview and I think it's important to recognize, like, I was so upset after watching the first episode about Dan Schneider and just like the pressures and he was putting on women and making women massage him in a workplace and just like being, you know, making inappropriate jokes in the shows and all of that, which is totally valid. Oh my gosh. I just had to go get a package from FedEx and it completely threw off my groove. I don't even know where I was or what I was talking about, but I feel like I'm getting so angry talking about this again. And I don't know. I guess I don't want to I don't know. I don't even know what to say. I think the whole thing was so informative of people's experiences. And thank God that fucking creep, Jason, got caught and went to jail. The person who literally had all that child images and, you know, memorabilia, I guess that's what I'll call it. It broke my heart when the mom didn't call the police on him when she saw those emails. It's like you really try not to judge anyone because you don't know how you're going to react in a situation. But, oh, my God, call the cops. What are you talking about? I don't know. Jason and Brian Peck, you can literally rot in hell. That is where you belong. And I cannot believe that he only got, what was it? He only got 16 months in jail. Oh. And then don't you worry, Disney motherfucking channel. You hired him after he left prison. And he worked on Sweet Love Zack and Cody as a dialogue coach. Excuse me. How are people hiring registered sex offenders for literally children's shows? What are you talking about? There has got to be so much more regulation, and I'm sure there is, but there's got to be so much more background checks, regulations, and therapy. Oh my gosh. Okay. That's what I was saying. Okay. So Dan Schneider did his own little interview after this came out. And I think it's important to note that Dan Schneider, there are so many things that he did wrong and that I think his feet should be held to the fire for. Very inappropriate jokes over two decades for children that have very sexual innuendos that are just totally inappropriate. Should never be on a kid's show. You should never have children doing that. The workplace harassment and making some of the women give him massages in wider writer rooms and, some of the writers, female writers not getting paid as equal and all that. There's a laundry list of things that were inappropriate. Now, none of those were necessarily illegal, to my knowledge. They were just morally not correct and ethically not correct, but they weren't illegal. And so he is in a different bracket of my mind than obviously Brian Peck and that Jason guy. That's where I get a little bit of grace for Dan. I think it's something to say that he did an interview after this all came out on his YouTube channel, and it was only 20 minutes long. It should have been longer. There definitely needed to be a lot more questions, but I was about to record this episode before I had watched it, and I came on raging at him. I just wanted to punch a wall. But then I listened to this, and it did give me a little bit of grace for him. Not that I think that it changes my mind on anything that he did that was inappropriate or anything, but he was saying how he knows that he was inappropriate in the workplace at times and, could be rude and could be selfish and was young and whatever. And he's very regretful for all those things. And the one thing that I will say it goes to show is even Drake Bell, Amanda Bynes, I guess I don't know how about Amanda Bynes feels about him anymore, but they were so close. Drake Bell, even after the whole arrest and everything, really leaned on Dan and became they were already close, but became even closer. And Dan was really there for him and was really apologetic. So much so that Dan helped Drake Bell's mother write her speech for the judge during the trial of the Brian Peck case. And he was in the interview. If you guys haven't watched it, I would go watch it because maybe it will just give you a little bit of grace for him. He was mortified that some of his colleagues and that adults who knew that Brian Peck was guilty went to the court and wrote letters of, asking the judge for a smaller sentence and whatever. He was mortified. He was like, what are you talking about? And so, and literally Ariana Grande still follows Dan Schneider to this day. So there's something to say about, I mean, obviously Jeanette McCurdy came out with a book and said she had negative experiences with him and he was an asshole and whatever. None of it was ever like sexual stuff. And so I guess that's where I give him just a little bit of grace. Like if you were, you know, you're crossing the line with some jokes and you were definitely inappropriate with women in the workplace and whatever, that is something where I think it's been, you know, 10 years. If you really have taken the time to get therapy and growth and you are so apologetic and whatever, there is a little room for grace there, I think. I don't know. It's hard. A thing he made a good point on was like, there were so many people that never said anything. He was like, I had no idea that people were thinking that these jokes were inappropriate because everyone's parents were in the room. We had a live studio audience that all were cracking jokes. They all thought it was funny. I had execs way above me. I had people way below me. Like no one ever said anything about the context of these jokes, and it was collaborative and we were all working on it. And I get that to a sense of, you know, almost like getting into a zone on these shows. And if one maybe joke was a little inappropriate and it lands well and everyone's loving it and it's making you, you know, so rich and so successful, then like you think that that's what people want. And if people aren't thinking it's inappropriate, then you're going to keep going with it. There were obviously a ton that I won't get over that he needs to be answered for his crimes. The Penelope Taint joke, the Superman of the kid with the shoulders that look like penises, all the cum shot looks, like those, there's no excuse for it, and it's totally inappropriate. Making women massage you at a workplace, gross. But I really did feel like a sense of, I don't know, that I felt like he was really appalled at his actions in his interview. So I guess that was good. But the fact that Brian Peck was still hired on a Disney show after this is just like so, so alarming. And I don't know. I actually don't even like know what else to say. Oh my God, I feel like I'm getting so frustrated about this. I guess my closing thoughts for it all is the industry is toxic as hell. And we knew that. And we knew that child stars had it hard. And I just think it's so, so sad to look back on things that made our childhood so amazing and really shaped all of us kids in a whole generation of kids. And for to learn on the backside that so many people sacrificed their entire life for those memories. They sacrificed their entire childhood, all of their life, all of their, you know, pride, dignity to give us entertainment and to shape culture for what it is. And looking back on it, it's like all of those shows are so funny and so like just so many people watched and loved and really connected to. And to just hear about the dark side of it, it kind of like taints just your whole childhood. And it really is a weird thing to sit back and think about. And I think with Dan Schneider, I would love to hear more of his story. Not that I am negating anything that I saw in Quiet on Set. I think it was disgusting. The jokes are disgusting, should have never happened. The way he spoke to women, talked to women, treated people on set is horrendous. But I think that those are things that maybe you can grow from, learn from your mistakes, grow, whatever. I think it is telling of his character and of maybe his intentions is what I'll say, about how like a lot of people in the industry still support him and still credit him to making amazing shows and whatever. The other people, they need to swallow gravel is what they need to do. And I'm so sad for Drake Bell and how that literally ruined his life. And like, he'll never be the same. And obviously then he like in a way continued that cycle of abuse. And I don't know. It's like, how do you learn all of this information and like ever want your children to be involved in like child acting or child modeling or anything? It's just such a scary industry. And I hope that with this coming out, so many more regulations and laws come into place. Oh, that's what I was going to say about the Dan Schneider thing. He said that his one hope for changing the child entertainment industry is that there needs to be therapists on set all the time, that the kids are required to do therapy regularly to A, make sure that nothing is happening, like with the Drake situation, and making sure that everything's good and whatever, and that they're not having superiorities or superiors that are making them feel uncomfortable or on set, or that, you know, everyone's being nice and they're being taken care of in their school and whatever. But then also the fact that they need therapy from day one in order for them to understand what is ahead if they become successful, how to handle attention, social media, online fame, photographs, red carpets, your family. Like, are you in charge of your family's money or not? How to handle those feelings and how to handle those thoughts? And are you capable of doing that? And the therapist then need to basically almost make the decision, like give a report card regularly on whether to the execs. And it needs to not be questioned, like whether or not this kid is suitable to be continuing in this industry and to be continuing on these shows. And I thought that that was a really good suggestion. And I really hope that it comes into play. I'm sure that they have some form of that already, you know, like access to therapy and whatever, but it just needs to be turned up to 10, especially when, like, when you're talking about 10, 11, 12, like thinking about where I was when I was 10, 11, 12 and how vulnerable I was and how, you know, your body's changing, you're going through puberty and you have so many new emotions. And it's just so sad to think that while these kids are giving us so much, that they were going through so much, and it really broke my heart. But anyways, gosh, didn't mean to start your guys' Friday off with a bad vibe, but a lot of you guys were asking me to comment my thoughts on the documentary, and I feel like my thoughts were so all over the place. I don't even know if I got to everything that I wanted to say, but there was almost so much in it that I didn't want to just like be repeating it all. And it's all like, it's a really heavy conversation to be had, and one that I don't really like having. I won't lie, I tried to record this episode like 4 times and I got like 10 minutes in and I was just like, I feel gross. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And so I'm not going to. This is kind of ending my thoughts on that. But if you haven't seen it, I think it's definitely a good watch. I definitely suggest watching it. Be prepared. It is heavy. But I think it's important to understand what scary things are out there, especially if you're a parent and you have children in your life. And I don't know. And it just helps you to be more sympathetic about people like Amanda Bynes, like, and Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan. We see all of these breakdowns of these super talented, amazing, artistic, funny actresses and actors who, you know, gave us so much for culture. And we see them break down and we immediately just throw them to the dust and, you know, toss it off as if they're just, oh, you know, they got stuck up in the party scene and they're drug addicts and, you know, what a loss. See you later. They shouldn't have gotten into that. And then you hear time and time again these people's stories, and it just like humanizes them so much. And I have so much sadness in my heart for Amanda Bynes specifically in this moment after watching it. I can't even watch her TikToks in like a funny way. I can't even finish watching a full one because I immediately just am like, I want to punch a wall because I'm so upset with what happened to her. And just watching these clips of her as a kid and just so much the light in her eyes and her smile and the way she talks, and she's so witty. And now like you can just see like that light is gone. I haven't seen Amanda Bynes smile on a TikTok or in an interview or the way she talks in years. I don't even think it's in there anymore in her soul. I don't even know if it's possible for her to come back, and it just breaks my heart. But anyways, oh my gosh, I'm such a Debbie Downer. I'm sorry. I love you guys. Happy Friday. I hope you guys have an amazing weekend. Stay safe out there. I'll see you guys next Wednesday.
Bye.